Happy Valley. Welcome to Happy Valley City Council work session. Today is Tuesday, October 16th, 2018. We will go over our regular session agenda, see if there's any questions that the staff can get ready for us. If not, then we'll go back to work session. So anything on the minutes, on the consent to change or... All right, and regarding the Eagle Scout project, I'm sure we'll have a presentation. We are going to have some singers, as I was kind of mentioning before the meeting started. It looks like there's going to be, I did have a phone call from some local gentlemen who run a nonprofit who are going to come sing a Happy Valley song that they made up. I can't remember the name, but anyway, they'll be here at 7, I told them for sure. And then anything regarding Resolution 1854? For Jason to sign the amendment to library district. Any questions on that?
It's the same that we saw at the work session.
That's right. Anything, you don't have anything?
There was one question that the council had about the signing authority of the county.
Right.
Would they be able to sign as Gladstone and then as the new Oak Lodge? Gladstone will have a vote, then the county will vote on the Oak Lodge, but it's kind of immaterial anyways because it doesn't change the two-thirds threshold. And furthermore, the county has a veto anyways because any amendments need to be passed by two-thirds and the Board of County Commissioners.
All right, I think that's it for regular meeting. It'll be a short one this evening. So work session items, how and why to use urban renewal. This is going to be a good topic.
Yeah,
Mr. Chuck.
So, thank you. Good evening. Much of this is going to be a repeat because you might have saw the presentation at the LOC conference this year. The mayor wasn't able to attend, but you're familiar with it. And as we started looking at the infrastructure financing out in East Happy Valley, starting to become apparent that the SDCs are probably not going to be enough to cover all of the needs that we have. Maybe over time, if we wanted it to go 30, 40, 50 years, yes, but if we wanted to get these road projects done sooner, we're going to need to find another funding mechanism. So there's also been discussion about making places. We're talking about that in the Pleasant Valley North Carver. Is there a downtown opportunity for the city? Is there an opportunity to maximize the placemaking at the Carver along the river? What about a community park or a community center? Looking at all of our funding options and our needs more holistically, the topic of urban renewal came up. So we're working with Nick on some of the infrastructure financing and looking at SDCs and urban renewal, and I decided it'd be good to have a conversation more focused here about urban renewal. And later in November, I'm going to bring back actually just the conversation about infrastructure financing for 172nd. So we'll have the benefit of some updated numbers and projections and both tools, urban renewal and SDCs, to evaluate. I don't want to get out too far on this without, this is education and idea sharing tonight. I don't want to get too far out. I know the fire district does have concerns about the creation of new urban renewal areas, so I would definitely want to have a lot more conversation with Fred about that and understand our kind of the regulatory side of this, but then there's a political side. So it's early stages, but it's good information. So I'll turn it over to I'll introduce Lynn Howard and Nick
Popenuk. Don't worry, I'm one of a kind. So.
Well, we used to have a Justin Popenuk, so it's kind of close. They're experts in the field, so I'll turn it over to them to go through the presentation. You have the materials in your work session packet too.
All right, thank you. As we said, I'm Nick Popenuk. I have a consulting firm, Tiberius Solutions. It's a public financing consulting firm. I've been doing this work for the last 12, 13 years now. Spent a decade of that with Echo Northwest, which you folks might be familiar with. They're one of the largest and well-established consulting firms for economics in the state. And then 3 years ago, split off and created my own firm and have been doing this work out on my own. I am currently working on a forecast that you all will be seeing in the next month that does show citywide what we anticipate the long-term SDC revenues will be. So you can start to think about if that's how much revenue we'll be generating with the current rates that we have, how does that compare to the costs of projects we want to fund, and how soon we want to fund those projects, and where are we falling short, what do we want to do about that. And at the same time as that forecast, which is largely driven by a forecast of how much development activity we anticipate happening in the area, we also are piggybacking off of that to forecast the potential TIF revenue that the city could experience if you created an urban renewal area around the portions of the city that have the largest infrastructure needs and potential for growth. So you'll be seeing those numbers a month from now, talking about the financial possibilities. This meeting doesn't talk about anything specific to your community. It's just setting the table, saying, okay, if we're going to be talking about actual numbers for urban renewal, let's make sure that we're all on the same page about what the tool of urban renewal is, how it works, and why we would or wouldn't want to use that tool. Elaine hasn't been doing any of the work thus far on the urban renewal and SDC analysis that I've been doing here. That's because Elaine and I have been partnering on this type of work for about 10 years, and she was already the most experienced urban renewal consultant in the state when I started working with her 10 years ago. In our partnership, I handle most of the financial projections. Elaine handles everything else. This whole presentation tonight is Elaine's presentation. She's allowed me to tag team it with her to cover the financial aspects of it. So I've been involved so far working with the city because everything we've been doing has been a financial forecast. But if the city is interested in moving forward with urban renewal after looking at those numbers, then Elaine would be an excellent choice for helping the city work on creating an urban renewal plan and going through all of the more complicated aspects of that. So I think with that, I'm actually going to turn it over to Elaine to maybe say a little bit more about her experience and start the presentation. And then once we get to some of the numbers portions of it, then I'll take it back over. So.
Right. So some of you were at the League of Oregon Cities meeting, and Scott from my firm did an Urban Renewal 101 presentation. And then I helped facilitate a luncheon discussion about urban renewal for housing developments. My firm has been doing urban renewal for the past 13 years, and as Nick said, we are pretty much the go-to firm for urban renewal in the state. So we've worked with over 75 different urban renewal areas across the state, so we know it kind of A to Z. We know how to start it, we know how to help you with amendments, we kind of do the full service package on urban renewal. So, I don't mind at all if you stop and interrupt me at any point during the presentation, and if I'm going to get to something, I'll say that's coming. Otherwise, urban renewal is pretty technical, pretty hard to understand a lot of times. So if you have a question and you feel like you need it answered now or you'll forget it, I don't mind at all being interrupted. So I'm going to just do the first part. Nick and I tag team a lot, so he may jump in on my slides, I may jump in on his slides, and we kind of both trust each other implicitly on all of it, so go ahead. We generally just start with the roadmap to let you know what we're going to discuss. So we're going to discuss why do cities choose to use urban renewal? Counties also can do urban renewal. Clackamas County has had urban renewal. We'll do a little crash course, Urban Renewal 101. We'll talk about why urban renewal for your particular city, and then a crash course 201, which gets even more specific, and I think Nick's going to pick that up. We'll talk about some different kinds of project examples, and then talk a little bit about how cities jumpstart development, which really isn't your issue here. Your issue, it sounds like, is more trying to fund infrastructure needs. I think development pretty much happens in Happy Valley on its own as long as the infrastructure is in place. So why use urban renewal? A lot of cities come to us because they have existing plans that I'm working with Corvallis right now. They had a refinement plan that was adopted in 1990. 2007. They have updated that a couple of times. The same ideas are still there, but they've never had a funding source to implement that plan. So urban renewal is a funding source. And a lot of times cities will have these plans, but never can make them happen. So if you're talking about building more of a village center or a center to your area, trying to figure out where you're going to get the funding to do that, urban renewal is a potential tool for that. Infrastructure needs, a lot of cities, we're working with Crestwell right now, their whole list of projects are only infrastructure needs. It's sewer, stormwater, roads. And they need to put that in to facilitate development within their community.
Those infrastructure projects also tend to be the ones that, you know, you mentioned your fire district has concerns about urban renewal. The Special Districts Association are frequently at the table talking about urban renewal. Infrastructure projects are the projects that are most often supported by fire districts and other overlapping affected taxing districts. If they see that you're planning to build roads and those roads are going to pave the way for other taxable development to come into the community that increases the tax base, also helps with their response times, those are the sorts of projects that are most likely to be supported by your overlapping taxing districts.
And in fact, Chief Charlton was part of a recent committee that I've been on looking at potential legislative changes to RS 457. And the fire districts have said, we support urban renewal, but we support certain types of projects. Infrastructure is one of those types of projects. So, as we all know, property tax revenue goes to regular taxing jurisdictions, and that's the premise upon which urban renewal builds. So, as property taxes go to those taxing jurisdictions, there are property tax increases. So every year when we get our property tax bill, it usually goes up that 3%. And those property and tax increases continue going to the taxing jurisdictions unless or until you form an urban renewal area. If you form an urban renewal area for that particular area, the property tax increases go to the urban renewal area to do projects and programs within that urban renewal area. So projects can't be done outside of the urban renewal area, have to be inside. The property tax revenue at the time you establish the area keeps going to all the taxing jurisdictions. It's only the revenue off of the increased value that goes to the urban renewal area, and it goes for a specified time frame. And we've worked on plans that recently, they're usually 25 to 30 years. Sometimes they're lower. I think your growth projections look pretty healthy, so maybe you wouldn't need an area that long. That's just one of the things, if you decide to pursue urban renewal, that we try to weigh when we're looking at an urban renewal. So why use urban renewal? You can use urban renewal to provide an alternate funding source for infrastructure improvements, sometimes for beautification. Also, many cities like to use it to encourage development if it's not happening on its own. You tell me when it's...
Yep, you've got a few more here until we really start to talk about the numbers.
What is urban renewal? What is blight? How does an area function? How does urban renewal financing work? What are property tax basics? What are state limitations on urban renewal, and how is it plan adopted? So what is urban renewal? It's an economic development tool. There are very few economic development tools that exist for cities. It is also a financing tool, like I said at the beginning. It comes with money, which is so very powerful for cities who are looking for revenue sources to be able to complete projects. It is a plan with specific projects. So if you adopt an urban renewal plan, there will be a set of projects that are approved along with the plan. It's used to address blighting influences in a city. And so I think if you would talk to people in Roseburg and you would tell them Happy Valley is talking about its blight, they would probably laugh at you. However, blight is defined in ORS 457, which is the statute that covers how urban renewal works. And one of the definitions of blight is underdevelopment or lack of development, but also lack of infrastructure or infrastructure needs. So if you need streets, stormwater, sewer, water, any of those infrastructure needs qualify as blighting. An entire area doesn't have to be blighted, there has to be evidence of blight within the area. So every lot doesn't have to show blight, all of the roads don't have to show blight, but there has to be a need for improvements within an area. It functions on increases in property tax revenues, like we talked about on that infographic at the beginning. And it's used all over Oregon. This is a map of urban renewal in Oregon, so you can see it's used all up and down the I-5 corridor. There, the little inset is the metropolitan area. So most of your neighboring cities have urban renewal of some sort that they're using. Many cities use it, kind of a small portion. There are a few cities. Wilsonville uses, they can have 25% of their total acreage. They have 24.57. It's the same with Lebanon. Lebanon has found urban renewal to be a very successful tool for them. They use over 24% up to their maximum. Other cities are a little more cautious because it does impact your general fund, and I think Nick will cover that. We talked about blight.
Yeah, so I'll jump in here now that we start to dig into the numbers a little bit more deeply. So as Elaine said, urban renewal is an income source, or rather, that's one component of it. So it's a organization and an entity because you have to form an urban renewal agency. It's a geography. You have to have a line on a map that shows where your urban renewal area is. And it's a plan that says what kind of projects you want to build, what are your goals and objectives. So all of those things are important parts of urban renewal. But the reason why it's successful in Oregon and why so many cities use it is really because of the funding source that comes with it. That's the tax increment financing. And with that revenue, that means that every year you're going to have a budget for your urban renewal area, and you'll be making expenditures. And those expenditures are allowed to be spent on capital projects, programs like beautification or like streetscape improvements or business loans, and then administration of the plan itself. One thing that you cannot spend your urban renewal dollars on are general operations and maintenance costs. So you can't use it to hire police officers to provide additional public safety. You could use it to build a new police station, although we're currently, the legislation that Elaine was talking about is likely to make it more challenging to spend urban renewal dollars on those types of public buildings. And again, that responds to the complaints of the special districts who say, we don't mind if you're using our dollars to pay for new streets and to help support new taxable development, but if you're using it to build your own public facilities, there are other tools you could use to do that. You could take out a general obligation bond or whatever. Key thing there, though, is that whatever kind of operations and maintenance you want to do, you can't be spending that out of urban renewal dollars. And then another key component of how urban renewal functions is the maximum indebtedness limit. So a lot of urban renewal plans have a time limit on them, but urban renewal plans are not required to have a time limit on them, which is why there are certain urban renewal plans that have been around for 30 or 40 years and are still alive and are still going. Generally speaking, folks are not excited about having an urban renewal plan exist for 40 or 50 years. It's a long amount of time to ask the overlapping taxing districts, including the entity themselves, to forego that revenue and have it all be going to the urban renewal area. So you want to have them shorter as possible. But again, there still isn't any requirement to have a time limit. That's because if you have a hard and fast stop date, that can make things challenging when you're trying to incur debt. Banks might not want to lend to you as freely if they know that your money gets turned off at a certain point in time. But the limit that is required by statute is a maximum indebtedness. And that is a hard dollar amount that says this is the total amount that you can spend on projects in that area over time. And despite the fact that it's called a maximum indebtedness limit, it's not like a credit card limit. You don't get to pay it down over time and then have that capacity open back up again. It really is a hard spending limit. And once you have spent that much money on projects, you can't spend any more, and you have to pay off any debt that you've incurred and then close the area down. So when we talk about how urban renewal works overall, this is a typical chart. This chart, you can even see sort of in the early years how it's a little bumpy early on. That's because this was taken from an actual jurisdiction we were working with, looking at their actual numbers. And so you can see that they originally started their urban renewal area, and the properties there were generating about $2 million in tax revenue a year. And every year going forward, that became the frozen base, and they continued to pay that $2 million in tax revenue, the overlapping taxing districts. Then slowly over time, it increased in tax revenue, and that increase became the increment value, and that increment value is the amount of money that went to the urban renewal area. Then down the road, they'll hit a date where they have completed all of their projects, they have hit their maximum indebtedness, they cannot invest in new projects anymore. The urban renewal area typically continues for a few more years, using those dollars to pay off the debt that they incurred in order to pay for those projects up front. And then once that debt is paid off, it expires, and all the money now goes to the other taxing districts. Here is another slide that's illustrating the same concept, but with a few more wrinkles on it. This is showing these two different dashed lines on the chart. The idea here is that if you are using your urban renewal tool successfully, you will be encouraging new taxable development that wouldn't have been able to happen in the community were it not for those urban renewal investments. If you do that correctly, that means that the growth in property tax revenue will be higher than what it would have been if you hadn't created an urban renewal area. That means that even though in the time that the urban renewal area is around, there's money going to the urban renewal agency, and that counts as foregone revenue from the overlapping taxing districts, some of that revenue wouldn't have existed but for the urban renewal investment. And if you're working with your fire district or others, and you can communicate a clear plan for what type of development you're hoping to achieve and why it would only happen with your urban renewal investment, then they can see, okay, the dollars that you're projecting here wouldn't exist if you hadn't come in and invested those dollars. Then once the urban renewal area is expired, if, again, you've been successful at encouraging more development, now you have raised the boats for everybody, and you have additional revenue that these other taxing districts can benefit from, albeit 20 or more years into the future once you've paid off your urban renewal area. This is really the heart of setting up a good urban renewal area, and an urban renewal area that your overlapping taxing districts could support. So we talk about Wilsonville, we've done a lot of work with them. They created their most recent urban renewal area, the Coffee Creek urban renewal area. It is a major potential industrial site that the state economic development people have had on their radar for years. It's one of their top priorities, and it is a bunch of dirt fields that nobody has put any money into for decades. And it's continued to sit like that because there is no infrastructure. They know that they need, their very first project is a major arterial to run north and south through the site, opening up the interior of it so that property owners can actually attract developers there. And they're currently in the works talking to multiple developers who are interested if only that road can get built. And urban renewal is going to be the funding source to help that road get built. The fire district was part of the advisory committee that considered that urban renewal area and endorsed that urban renewal plan that then went out to voters for an advisory vote and was successfully endorsed by the voters of that community. And a big part of the narrative of why folks supported it was because it was really clear that this area is not going to be generating any tax revenue if we don't do anything here. But if we do invest here, the area could be generating a lot of tax revenue. So that's what this graph demonstrates. There are, of course, other communities that have used urban renewal that have used it to spend money on projects that did not increase the tax base and that really didn't generate any more revenue and truly was taking foregone revenue from those other taxing districts and just diverting it into their own pocket to spend on the projects that they thought were more important. In those cases, some of the communities still really liked that plan because it was the only way that they were going to be able to ever fund whatever project it was, but it's not the same sort of everybody wins kind of an analysis.
You're turning that off?
No. Oh no, it's off currently.
I work with the city of Coos Bay. They're great. They are located in a place where the economic engine does not exist. And they have had two urban renewal areas for the last 20 years. They have their growth line there instead of that nice line, their growth line is more like this. But they're able to use that little money that they get to do projects that the community loves. So they've done storefront improvements. They improved their main theater. They improved an historic building downtown. So No, it's not increasing the tax base like something like that would, like Coffee Creek would, like yours potentially would. But the community totally supports what they're doing because it's improving the community in the small way that it can.
And the overlapping taxing districts are on board with that, even though they're not getting the increases?
We just did an amendment to their urban renewal area that required going back to all the overlapping taxing districts. And the county voted unanimously to support it, and no other taxing district opposed it. And I think it's because they see that urban renewal has had an impact on the community, although a different kind of impact. Businesses, this was in the Empire District, so a number of businesses have been approved in that district, the former homes, so that district looks and feels better in the neighboring community, and use that business district and feel good about it because there are local services. So it's a different kind of urban renewal area, but especially up and down the coast, cities typically have used it for that, to support their small businesses, to improve. Astoria has used urban renewal really successfully. They haven't increased their tax base like this, but they've done incredible improvements to their downtown. That brings in more tourism, makes people want to visit it more, makes the businesses flourish more. So there are different ways to use urban renewal.
I can also think of the Lake Oswego Lake Grove Village Center Plan.
Yes.
It's a mouthful. That was a plan that we worked on for them. It's in the Lake Grove area, which is a residential area that's largely already built out. There wasn't a lot of room for new development to happen there. But the main road, Boone's Ferry Road, that ran through that area, was woefully inadequate for the community. They had a great vision for rebuilding that road, but it wasn't going to add new capacity. So it wasn't something that they could use their SDC dollars for. It wasn't a freight route, so they couldn't get state grants or federal grants for it. So their actual pockets of money that they could use to build this road project were incredibly limited. So they just didn't have very many other options. They created this urban renewal plan that set aside part of the funding for the project, and then went out to the voters and asked them for a general obligation bond to pay for the other part of the project. And the voters voted for the bond, understanding that we're not going to pay the full amount through this increased tax, because urban renewal will also help pay for part of it. So in that situation, they were using urban renewal, recognizing that it's really not going to be generating more development, but this is blight in our community. Again, when you think of Lake Oswego, you don't think of blight, but folks who lived in that Lake Grove area, who had to try and have their kids cross Boone's Ferry Road every day, to them, that was blight. That was a problem that had been around for decades.
And no way to solve it.
Right. So that was one example. And then I just gave a presentation a week or two ago at the OEDA conference, Oregon Economic Development Agency, and Matt Lorenzen from the city of Estacada was there. They have a relatively new urban renewal area, and he was sharing freely about how they have not been successful at generating new taxable development. But their, Estacada, trying to get development to take place there is really challenging. And so they were able to pay for a redone streetscape that everybody in the community loves the new look and feel of their downtown, and they've started to use it to help local businesses. They purchased property that they are now leasing out to a couple of local businesses that are really tourism-focused, kayak and whitewater rental supplies, and then they have like a frozen yogurt stand. And those businesses are local property owners, local residents, who couldn't find a place that they could afford in town. And so the city was able to buy this location for them, rent it out to them. They're successful. The streetscape looks good. They're hoping that this leads to eventually actual taxable development taking place. So far it hasn't, but they're still pleased with how the tool has worked out for them.
Got it.
So one other point that we talk about, when we talk about urban renewal, ideally you are generating that taxable development that means everybody's a winner, that long term you do create more value for all the taxing districts and for the community. Whether or not that happens, urban renewal is financially beneficial for the city, and that's because you are controlling where the money goes that is generated from the property tax in that area. So this shows a typical city where the city's tax rate is roughly a third of the overall tax rate. In that example, the city would be getting $2 for every one of their own that goes into the urban renewal area. In your city, which may have the lowest tax rate of any city in Oregon, where your tax rate is 67 cents per thousand, because this does not include local option levies. Urban renewal only touches your permanent rate levies. So any local option levy continues as undisturbed as it was before, same with general obligation bonds. But your permanent tax rate of 67 cents, when the total is $12 and some odd, looking at those permanent rates, means that for every $1 of the city tax rate going into the urban renewal area, you'd be getting $18 or $19 from the other taxing districts. So you immediately have a massive leverage. Again, that's not talking about whether it's good or bad for the community, for the overlapping taxing districts. That's purely from the city's perspective in terms of leveraging your funds to be able to do more with it. And obviously, you want to think about this from a more holistic perspective, but there is very clearly a large ability to leverage your dollars through the use of urban renewal. A couple more tricky things here. Urban renewal does not increase anybody's taxes, but urban renewal does show up on people's tax bills. And that seems like it's contradictory, and it's tough to explain. So this shows an example. Again, these tax rates aren't for your community. They're from some other place we worked in before. But it shows how much the tax rate was. The next column says, okay, let's take a hypothetical tax bill for a property worth $100,000 in value. And here's how much money each of those taxing districts would be receiving in taxes. Adds up to $1,476. Then the next year, whether or not you have urban renewal, that property, we say, is going to increase by 3%. So now it's worth $103,000. So now the total tax bill has gone up to $1,520. That's an increase of $44. And if you didn't have urban renewal, the county would get a little bit more, the library would get a little bit more, everybody gets a little bit more. If you have urban renewal, however, now your tax bill is still the same, $1,520, but instead of seeing that little bit of increase for all the other districts, they stay getting exactly the same amount they did when the frozen base happened. And the entire amount of that growth, $44, goes to the urban renewal agency. So that's how urban renewal works on the tax bills. But there is, in fact, more to that. So we're going to go through right how urban renewal ought to work and then explain why it doesn't work that way. So when we look at urban renewal, let's say this is a hypothetical city. It's got 40 houses in it. Each one is assessed at $100,000, so you've got a total of $4 million of assessed value. Now you've taken a quarter of those houses and created them into an urban renewal area. So 10 houses, they combine to have $1 million of assessed value. You calculate the amount of tax revenue by looking at how much they grow in value from the first year to the next. They all grow by 3%. That means that they've grown by $30,000 worth of value. If the tax rate is $15, then that means that urban renewal area should be receiving $450 next year. The way that it all would make sense is that each of the homes in the urban renewal area pays $45 and that nobody outside of the urban renewal area pays anything. That sounds good. That's the way it should work. That's the way it used to work. That's not the way that it actually works. So how it actually works is that $450 is spread to every single home in the community. So everybody is paying $11.25 in this example. It still adds up to the $450 in total. So the amount that the urban renewal area is getting is still the same as if it was coming all from those properties. The amount going to the other taxing districts is the same as if it was done the other way. It's just much more confusing and painful this way, and it's all the result of a lawsuit that happened 15 or 20 years ago. So again, the amount of money is still going to all the right places. The frozen base revenue is going to the existing property taxes. The new revenue is going to the other taxing districts from elsewhere in the city. And then the amount of new revenue coming from the urban renewal area is going to the urban renewal area. So, but it does, you will definitely, if you have an urban renewal area, you will have complaints from citizens saying, why am I paying taxes to the urban renewal area? I don't live in the urban renewal area. Why is my tax bill more? This is incredibly difficult to explain to them. And even if they came in and sat down for an hour-long presentation, they still might not believe it because they say, but it's on my tax bill. So that's just something that you will always have to deal with when you're talking about urban renewal.
And for the cities with whom we work, we give them a nice little handout that they can give people that will totally confuse them, but it's the best that we can do in terms of explaining it, and they'll, you know, they'll at least know there's some answer, right, Ben?
Well, and I was just gonna add in that hypothetical example, that $11 and some change that somebody was paying outside the district, their taxes for all the other jurisdictions actually went down $11.25. So it's just how they divide that out.
Right. But try telling them that their tax bill went down.
Shows on the bill. Shows on the bill.
Right. So with this, urban renewal definitely has an impact to taxing districts. I think the graphs that we showed earlier, you know, demonstrate that. We are talking about foregone revenue. We are talking about revenue that's foregone for a long period of time. I have never worked with an urban renewal agency that has been successful at having a total lifespan of less than 20 years. I don't know if you've had any.
I have one, the Redmond Airport, industrial airport. It's
so
the only one.
We've worked with, again, 75 or more urban renewal districts over our careers, and one we've seen that has been around for less than 20 years. Again, we'll be back next month to talk about the projections we have for your urban renewal area, and the draft projections do look fairly healthy. We have to compare that to whatever the projects that you want to fund and all that, but it's possible that yours could be another great home run of an urban renewal area that is, you know, 15 to 20 years. But typically, urban renewal areas last for 20 or 30 years these days. And now the last thing here is, maybe not the last, one of the last things is talking about the impact of urban renewal and school districts. There are a bunch of fun slides here, but
just
maybe I'll just skip through.
One.
Yeah.
So that just shows you how complicated it is,
right.
I think.
Mm-hmm. So the key point is that urban renewal does not have a direct impact on your local school funding. So a school's funding is based entirely on the number of students that it has, and what the state legislature decides is the per pupil funding amount. And if your local property tax revenue goes up or down, the state equalizes that with a grant from the state schools fund. So if you create an urban renewal area and the tax revenue is foregone from your school district to your urban renewal agency, it doesn't have any actual impact, direct impact on the school funding. Now, if you think about all the urban renewal areas that exist all over the state of Oregon that are all taking money out of their local property tax revenues, there is an argument to be made that if urban renewal didn't exist, the state would be able to increase the per student funding amount. So that is a absolutely legitimate argument to have. But if you're thinking about adopting an urban renewal plan, you're not thinking about whether you want to eliminate urban renewal from the state or not. You're thinking about whether you want to create one for your own community. And creating one for your own community will not have any direct impact. And right now, any urban renewal area that exists anywhere in the state is having the same impact on school funding overall. It's the 10 different urban renewal agencies in the city of Portland that are pulling a lot of revenue away from the Portland Public School District, that is having a drain on the ability of the state school fund to fund education. Same thing with the other, however many, 60 communities across the state.
On the other hand, when we talk with legislators, they tell us there's no guarantee if urban renewal went away that all that money would go to the state school fund.
Right.
We may decide to use less of other sources and still keep that per pupil ratio.
I could almost guarantee that all of the money would not go back.
So it's a political discussion. It's not something we can answer. We can only explain to you how it works.
David?
How often do you receive kickback when you first start presenting an urban renewal area from school districts?
Almost never from the school district.
It's who then?
Sometimes members of the community will be upset because they'll think about the school district. Right.
Okay.
But every school district I've ever talked to has understood this. And they want to see good projects, good infrastructure. They want to see the ability for new homes to be built in their community, which brings in more kids. More kids brings in more money from the state school fund. So every school district I've worked with has been supportive of urban renewal because they are unique compared to all other taxing districts in terms of how it affects their bottom line.
And especially if you're able to put in infrastructure improvements that allow the capacity for new houses to be developed, and those new houses, like Nick says, have students in them, that's how they make their money. More kids in their schools, more money to their schools.
Mr. Bryant?
And there's also an argument to be made that taxes, income taxes from Happy Valley residents are already going to subsidize urban renewal districts all throughout the state because our income taxes are going into the state school fund that's helping equalize the urban renewal districts funds in our school districts in other cities where there's an urban renewal district.
Right. It's
so
definitely,
we're already paying for them to have urban renewal districts.
There's a bit of a fairness question if you're the only community in the state that's not using urban renewal and everybody else is. And it's not that extreme. There are other communities not using urban renewal, but you know the map showed there's an awful lot of communities that are using this tool right now. So with that, I think, Elaine, I'll turn it over to you for the last few slides, and I think then go through some
project
examples.
What is your population now?
Almost 22.
So you're under 50,000. If you're under 50,000 population, you may have up to 25% of your total assessed value in urban renewal and up to 25% of your total acreage in urban renewal. You can have that in one district or you can have it in four districts. It doesn't matter. That limitation, just a total limitation. So a lot of cities, when they're first thinking about urban renewal, they'll kind of step in slowly. They'll maybe do a smaller district. Some cities will do a larger district. Doesn't really matter. Those limitations are the limitations that matter. Once you have an existing urban renewal plan, you may never increase it by more than 20% of its original acreage. So if it had 1,000 acres to begin with, you can never add more than 200 acres to that urban renewal area. No matter if you take some out and think, well, okay, we've taken some out, so now we can add. That's not how it works. It's a hard and fast rule. Maximum indebtedness is established at the time that you adopt an urban renewal plan. If you decide at some point, well, that wasn't really enough money and we need more and we want to increase our maximum indebtedness, you're allowed to do that by statute, but you have to go through the whole same process that you did to adopt your original urban renewal plan, which means going back and talking to the taxing districts again, going back to your planning commission again. There are limitations to that also. You may never increase it by more than 20% of your original maximum indebtedness unless you get concurrence from the other taxing districts, and that means 75% of the total permanent rate levy districts that represent that also approve that increase in your maximum indebtedness. I've had them do that. The city of Sandy wanted to do recently, the last couple of years, a community facility pool in their area. And even the fire district, everybody was on board. Fire districts typically don't support community facilities. They were on board because they knew that that was something that the city needed. So it's not impossible to get that concurrence from other taxing districts.
Salem's doing it right now. I'm working with them on a major increase, and it's an urban renewal area that's been around for 30 years already, and this is going to keep it around for another 15 or 20. But it happens to be in an area that the community is really, really focused on, and the taxing districts know that. And so everybody is holding hands and singing kumbaya as they prepare to spend tens of millions of dollars more and keep it around for another 10, 15 years.
Those are just important things to think about when you're establishing your urban renewal area up front. So how is a plan, well, this says a plan amendment adopted. So just get rid of that word amendment. How is a plan adopted? There's a requirement for public input. So usually that's an advisory committee of some sort, an open house or community forum to talk to people about urban renewal, to do goals and objectives, projects, budgets. You form an urban renewal agency. If for some reason you don't want to adopt a plan, you can rescind that agency. But an agency is actually the body that sends the urban renewal plan out for formal public review. So you form the agency, and you move ahead. If you decide not to do it, you just rescind that ordinance forming the agency.
Elaine, I don't know if you have this on a future slide, but the composition of your agency board, you might want to just...
So the statute says that the city council gets to determine who is your urban renewal agency. Most urban renewal agencies we work with are the city council themselves. Sometimes they add a fire district person because fire districts are so interested in urban renewal and the impacts on them. Down in Corvallis last night, the county totally supported our new proposal there, but they asked for a seat at the agency. So sometimes taxing districts will say, we want to be on your board. That decision is a decision of the city council.
And occasionally there are business owners or other private citizens.
Right.
Whoever the city council decides on, but it almost, I don't know, what, 90% of the time, it's
90%.
It's just the city council.
And if they make it something else, they can come in and change it. It's the city council's decision. So let's say they, down in Southern Oregon, both the cities of Phoenix and Talent had separate boards that had maybe one or two city council members on it. They, both of those cities just decided that didn't work, and they took it back under their purview, and you have the authority to do that. You have to present it to the county. The county doesn't get a vote, but you have to tell them what you're doing. You have to go to your planning commission. They usually give a ruling on whether or not it conforms to your comprehensive plan. It has to conform. The planning commission is usually the body that we look to say yes or no, it doesn't. It goes to the city council for a hearing that's noticed to all of your community. So it's either through voter registration, utility bills, addresses. There are four different ways that you can do it by statute. The city can pick which way they want to do that. Postal patrons, I think, is the other. It has to be a non-emergency ordinance, so it doesn't go into effect for 30 days after passage. During that time period, if people in your community are against it, they can get a petition, get a referendum, put it on the ballot, and vote it down. Where are we on your time?
I would say probably wrapping it up.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think we need to, this was something that the League of Oregon Cities asked for when we made that presentation. Project examples, we'll just go through these really fast. This is a project in Albany. You can look back at these. This is one in Hillsboro, a mixed-use project. This is a senior project in Redmond. This is a potential mixed-use project in Klamath Falls. These are ideas of infrastructure. This is in Sandy. They have a very successful storefront loan program. This is another project in Sandy. This is the Fort George Brewery in Astoria. You can see how horrible that building was initially. It is an economic engine in Astoria right now. This is the Estacada streetscape. They aren't that far from you. You should go up there and take a look at it. It is beautiful. They did a great job. This is in Seaside, and it just shows one street looking one direction and the other direction that shows street improvements, undergrounding utilities, light fixtures. These are some different parks that have been done.
All right.
Okay. Nice presentation. Understood. Mm-hmm. Questions, councilors? Councilor Sherman.
One quick question. I was talking to an individual involved with the Urban Renewal District over by Clackamas Town Center.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how the district was already done, but they had money left in the bank for some projects.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
I worked on that amendment to actually spend that money.
Gotcha.
For the county. They had saved some money on some other projects, so they had money. They hadn't reached their maximum indebtedness yet, so they are still able to spend that money. They went out to the community and said, how do you want us to spend that money? Part of that money was spent on assisting one of the schools, adding a cafeteria to one of the schools, because the community said, we'd like you to help our schools in this area. So they had the money. They hadn't exceeded their maximum indebtedness. There wasn't a requirement that that money go back to the taxing districts yet, so they were able to devise some new projects to use.
Yeah. Usually you will run out of maximum indebtedness.
Yes.
Before you have turned off the TIF faucet, because you have debt you need to repay. They wound up in the opposite situation where they had turned off the money coming in, but they actually hadn't reached their maximum indebtedness and they still had funds left over.
Okay.
So
there is some potential for flexibility at the end of a project.
As long as you haven't reached your maximum indebtedness. Yeah.
Because okay. You had originally talked about how you need to kind of put the projects in place, have those initial goals set.
Right.
And so it required.
I think they also had income from property sales, so they had bought some property, resold that property, so they had that money sitting there that they were able then to say, you know, it's already been used, run through the maximum indebtedness, return to them. Once it's returned, you can still use that within the urban renewal area, and so they went to the community and said, how do you want us to spend this?
But they weren't able to just go out and spend money on the school cafeteria. They have to have that project listed in their plan.
So we had to do an amendment.
Amend the plan to add the project in.
Okay, great, thank you.
Anything else? Lots to chew on, lots to think about for the future.
Thank you.
Good presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, let's adjourn. No, let's do city manager for some time.
I have a few things.
We have a, yeah, few minutes.
Reminder that the council meeting on November 6th is canceled. Gay sent out a few emails today about upcoming events. One is the HBA, Home Builder Association Housing Forecast, and the other one is the Oregon Business Plan, the Leadership Summit in December. So just make sure to RSVP to her if you want to attend those. She'll get us signed up. Harvest Fest is this Saturday. I sent out an email, and I actually looked back through it, and it had the pie eating contest on there, 2:30 to 3, I think.
Yeah, it had that, but that's it.
It had four different scheduled items.
Right.
I did that one time. I don't recommend it for anyone.
The judging or actually
the
eating?
Actual eating of the pie.
Yeah.
You'll never look at pumpkin pie.
So if you want to judge, let me know, and I'll have Steve arrange it so you get up there and do some judging, or if you want to eat. But if there's any other details, I'll find out from Steve, and I'll let the council know. That's all I had.
Okay. All right, let's adjourn to a regular meeting.